Welcome to the Weekend Messages podcast from Pastor Philip Gonzalez and Outpost Church. Our mission is to help people say yes to Jesus so they can flourish for the glory of God. And we hope today's message helps you do just that. If you would like to learn more or contribute through giving, you can do both online at outpostchurch.org. And remember, the more you say yes to Jesus, the more you are an outpost of the kingdom of God.
Well, tonight we say goodbye to an old friend, and in the preparation for this series, I wasn't really sure how long it was going to be. Sometimes, you know, you can map out, this is a four-week series or a six-week series, but coming into a book like Ecclesiastes, I knew that there was going to be a lot of ground to cover, and I wasn't sure exactly how much time it would take. And so we come tonight to our 10th session, our 10th installment in this series that we've called Under the Sun, How to Live and Finish Well from the Book of Ecclesiastes. And I've been so blessed by many of you that have said how the messages have impacted you and have been an inspiration or reminded you of something you needed to know. Man, I've been really convicted by a lot of the things in this series because I realize how many times in my life I miss out on what God has for me. So tonight we get to finish up, and I hope that, of course, the journey won't end there, but that the things that we've learned together will continue to be a blessing in your life, as I pray they will be in mine. That said, last week we began a two-part message. I thought, you know, it could be two messages, but it's really two parts of the same thing, a message that I call the treadmill and the trampoline. Last week we talked about the treadmill. This week we talk about the trampoline. A couple of years ago, anybody ever jumped on a trampoline? Yeah, almost everybody, yeah. A couple of years ago, my family and I were living in our condo. We had neighbors upstairs, we had neighbors downstairs. And my son at that time had a habit where when he would play games on the TV or whatever it was, he would get really excited and he would do this. Which is kind of a problem when people live below you because they don't like that. I wonder, have any of you ever lived in a situation where someone above you was a little too loud? Ever had that? Yeah. Well, that was us too, by the way. The people above us were really loud and had a huge dog, but that's a message for another day. The point was that that my son was having a great time, but the people below us were not. So it just so happens that my brother and sister-in-law, youngest brother and sister-in-law, they're really big into movement and fitness and body health and things. They gave Bradley a trampoline, one of these little, you know, exercise sort of trampolines. Now, full disclosure, I know, man, I have a great privilege of being here and proclaiming God's word. Just because I get to be on a platform teaching stuff does not mean I always make the right choices. For example, I thought that when he was jumping on the ground, his feet were just hitting the floor, causing that boom, boom, boom. And I thought, well, what if the impact of his jump could be absorbed by the springs of the trampoline? I know, we'll just set the trampoline up indoors, and then when he bounces, he can bounce on the trampoline instead of the floor, and it will lessen the impact. Apparently, I was wrong. Because regardless of how much or how little the physical impact was absorbed by the springs, by the way, the whole thing would lift off the ground and then hit again. So that was a problem, right? But regardless of the physical impact, the felt impact from our neighbors was, we told you that we didn't like your son jumping on the floor and you got him a trampoline? They didn't know that I was trying to do a good thing. They only took it as a bad thing. Here's what I found out. Trampolines are not good for reducing noise levels. What trampolines are good for is by giving you a different perspective, one bounce at a time. And so tonight, we're going to look at a few highlights. We're going to go through four chapters. Everybody say four. Four chapters of Ecclesiastes, but don't worry, it's not going to take nearly as much time as you might think, because we're not doing this treadmill style, we're doing it trampoline style, hitting some highlights as we move through. Why? Well, because as we learned last week, once we get into the latter portions of Ecclesiastes, there's a lot of repetition. Now, repetition isn't a bad thing. In fact, we found out last week that repetition is a key to good results. And we discovered that, and you know this, in exercise, in eating, in job training, in music lessons, all those things. Repetition is a key to good results. And so we realize that Solomon wants us to know what he's trying to share. And so he repeats himself several ways. But that said, we're going to just hit some highlights here. Now, like I said, this is part two of our message, Treadmills and Trampolines. And if you have a Bible, you can go there with us to Ecclesiastes 9 through 12. If you don't have a Bible, you can look around and find a hardback black one somewhere nearby, or you can follow along on whatever app you prefer. Now, a couple things that we learned and looked at last week. We discovered that really, just so you know, repetition is a key to good results. Yeah, just so there's that. Now, a few weeks ago, specifically in week 5, we learned this key thought. We said that Solomon wants us to know, enjoy your life humbly. Why? Because you are going to die, which is a cheerful thought, right? No, it's not a cheerful thought, but it's an important one. Because as we discovered in week 5, only when you really embrace the truth of your mortality can you really begin to make decisions that matter well today. And we looked at that, and that's really the main idea that we're going to discover in chapter 9. So I invite you to read along with me as we read through chapter 9 of Ecclesiastes. Here's what he says. Indeed, says Solomon, I took all this to heart and explained it all. The righteous, the wise, and their works are in God's hands. People don't know whether to expect love or hate. Everything lies ahead of them. Everything is the same for everyone. There is one fate for the righteous and the wicked, for the good and the bad, for the clean and the unclean, for the one who sacrifices, you could rewrite that to say the one who is religious or faithful to God, for the one who sacrifices and the one who does not sacrifice. As it is for the good, so also it is for the sinner. As it is for the one who takes an oath, so also for the one who fears an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun. There's one fate for everyone. Anybody want to guess what that fate is? It's death. Yeah, that's it. One out of one. In addition, he says, the hearts of people are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live. After that, they go to the dead. So cheerful. But there is hope for whoever is joined with all the living, since a live dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead don't know anything. There's no longer a reward for them because the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their envy have already disappeared, and there's no longer a portion for them in all that is done. And here's the key phrase right here, under the sun. So don't get thrown when Solomon is saying things like, there's nothing after this, it's all done, it's all gone, it's all forgotten. Remember, as we explored in week number 1, the scope of this book is not for all time and eternity, but it's specifically looking at life under the sun. And so, understanding that everyone's going to die, no matter how hard you try, eventually you'll die. Here's what he recommends. Verse 7, go, eat your bread with pleasure and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already accepted your works. Let your clothes be white all the time and never let oil be lacking on your head. By the way, those are just, you know, ancient kind of beauty tips. You don't need to feel like you have to go and get some, you know, canola oil or something and dump it. That's not appropriate. Leave the olive oil in the kitchen. It's not cosmetic. Right. But cosmetics are okay. Let your clothes be white all the time. Never let oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife you love all the days of your fleeting life, which has been given to you under the sun, all your fleeting days. For that is your portion in life and in your struggle under the sun. Whatever your hands find to do, do with all your strength, because there's no work, planning, knowledge, or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. Once again, by the way, Solomon's not talking about the afterlife. Sheol is a general term used for being dead. Everybody say being dead. Everybody will be dead at some point, right? So don't get thrown off by that. Verse 11, and again I saw under the sun, and by the way, this is so, I've heard this misquoted so many times. Don't misquote this. Again I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong or bread to the wise or riches to the discerning or favor to the skillful. Pause there. Sometimes I've heard this taught, like, and it stops there. And the point that's made is, you know, the race is not to the swift and the battle is not to the strong. So if you're not fast and if you're not strong and if you're not hardworking, don't worry about it. That's absolutely not the point. Because the verse continues, rather, time and chance happen to all of them. So it's not really an encouraging verse at all. Here's what it is an encouragement to do, though. I wrote this down. Pursue humility, not laziness. Verse 12, for certainly no one knows his time. Like fish caught in a cruel net or like birds caught in a trap, so people are trapped in an evil time as it suddenly falls on them. And I observed that this also is wisdom under the sun, and it is significant to me. There was a small city with few men in it. A great king came against it, surrounded it, and built large siege works against it. Now a poor wise man was found in the city, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered the poor man. And I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heeded. The calm words of the wise are heeded more than the shouts of a ruler over fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner can destroy much good. So that's chapter 9. It's not recommended bedtime reading. It's not what you want to read when you're in a season of difficulty, because reading chapter 9 is really repeating a lot of the themes that Solomon has already said, that sometimes life doesn't make sense. And sometimes life is just no fun. It just feels no good. Sometimes life just seems like a waste. And yet, there's a purpose in it. And there can be a beauty in it if you know where to look and how to find it. And as I was reading through and praying and studying and thinking through really this whole chapter, which had so much repetition from some of the other things we've read, it really, I think, came down to these three things. If you're taking notes, you could write these down. Enjoy life while you can, because it's not going to last forever. Live life as well as you can. Hey, you don't get a do-over. This is it. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? Don't punt. Don't sit on the bench. Live life as well as you can. And then leave behind as much wisdom as you can. There's people around you that could learn from the lessons that you're discovering. My father tells a story about his father, who told my father, he said, you know, son, in life, you can learn from the school of hard knocks, or you can learn from the experience of others. And one of those two has a tuition that's way higher than the other. What are you going to choose? So enjoy life while you can. Live life as well as you can, and leave behind as much wisdom as you can. Why? So you can help others learn from your experience. And I think those three things really sum up what we find in chapter 9. So I wonder where you are in your life right now. Are you enjoying it while you can? You may say, ha! If you knew the details of my life, you would see that it's not very enjoyable. Okay, I get it. Sometimes seasons stink. I get that. But surely there's something to be grateful for. I heard it said the other day, I was listening to a podcast interview person, and they were talking about Not too long ago, there were these protests in New York City. They were called Occupy Wall Street. Perhaps you've heard of them. Plenty of different perspectives on both sides of the issue. But the thing that was highlighted in this particular interview, which I thought was so interesting, was that so many people were railing against the 1%. And we were just so, upset about the 1%. And the person on the interviewer said, if you live in America, you are the 1% compared to the rest of the world. And it's so much easier for us to point at other people who have more or have it better, or we think they do anyway, and say, well, if I only had what they have, or if I was like they were, or if I was where they are, then I would be able to enjoy. But don't miss the opportunities to enjoy where you are right now, in the midst of the hardship, in the midst of dissatisfaction and frustration and pain, I know, but there's always something to be grateful for. And then live life as well as you can. Don't give up. Don't sit back on your haunches and just say, well, I hope it gets better. Do something about it. We'll get to that in a minute, but leave behind as much wisdom as you can. Now, that said, I want to hop forward into the next section. Because it's great to say leave behind as much wisdom as you can, but how do you do that? And what does he mean by wisdom anyway? Well, we're going to take a look at that. Follow along with me. Let's go to chapter 10, verses 2 through 4, because Solomon's going to talk about wisdom. We'll read verses 2 through 4 and then jump ahead to 12 and 15. Look at what Solomon says. He says, a wise person's heart goes to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Even when the fool walks along the road, his heart lacks sense, and he shows everyone he is a fool. If the ruler's anger rises against you, don't leave your post, for calmness puts great offenses to rest. Skip ahead with me to verse 12. The words from the mouth of a wise person are gracious, but the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of the words from his mouth is folly, but the end of his speaking is evil madness. Yet the fool multiplies words. No one knows what will happen, and who can tell anyone what will happen after him? The struggles of fools weary them, for they don't know how to go to the city. So, step there for a moment and consider Solomon is comparing and contrasting the wise person and the foolish person. And maybe you've spent some time reading the Bible, maybe not. If you have, perhaps you know that Solomon spends a lot of time in his writings talking about the difference between the wise person and the foolish person. But here's what I found out. It's way easier to always assume the other guy is the foolish person than it is to acknowledge the folly within ourselves. And that's what drew me back then to the first verse of this chapter, chapter 10, because I think this is really the highlight of this section where Solomon is talking about wisdom and foolishness. Look at what he says. You can read it on the screen or follow along in your own Bible. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 1 says this, dead flies make a perfumer's oil ferment and stink. But by the way, just pause for a second. Have you ever done some cooking or some sort of a project that went really wrong and smelled up your house? You ever done that? I remember one time I was trying to cook. I was a bachelor, and I was trying to cook this health concoction. And what I found out was I had heard that coconut oil was really good for you, and that honey is really good for you, and that cinnamon is really good for you. So I thought it would be a great idea to mix the coconut oil and the honey and the cinnamon, and I'd stir it all up, and then I'd let it cool, and I'd have like little bites or something. I thought it would be great. I didn't realize that the boiling and melting and solidification, like the temperature points of coconut oil and honey, are very, very different. So what I got, instead of this nice little mixture that I could eat and enjoy, was something that looked like a cross between, I don't know, vomit and congealed turkey fat. Not good. Now, the good news is it didn't smell, but it really looked bad. Now, maybe you've had that thing where you try to cook something or make something, and it wasn't that it looked bad, but it really smelled. And so we have this thing where Solomon is talking about someone mixing oil and mixing substances to try to make something that's beautiful and that is pleasing. And by the way, Most of the time in the ancient world, perfume was not necessarily cosmetic for most people. The rich could afford that. But for most people, perfume was something you put on a dead body. You saved it till the end of your life. At the end of your life, you would be embalmed with perfume and it would be nice. And yet the person making the perfume, if dead flies get into it, the very thing that was supposed to be beautiful and fragrant and attractive becomes disgusting and repulsive. And so Solomon says, in the same way, a little folly, foolishness, unwise decisions, a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. And I got to thinking about that, how perfume is something that they would have used at the end of life. And it was supposed to be that when you would come and you would reflect on this person's life, they smelled nice and it was a beautiful experience. I thought about how many times we have those moments when we attend a memorial service or a funeral and we remember the good things about a person's life and the legacy they left. And I thought about how for each of us, I hope, that we would want to leave a good legacy behind. And we'd want to be remembered well. We would want to be remembered for wisdom and honor. And yet, I started to think, what dead flies in my life might inhibit that legacy of honor and wisdom that I would like to leave? And I wonder what dead flies or little follies in your life might short-circuit the legacy that you're trying to leave. Here's my question to you, or my encouragement to you. Don't let your flies make you act the fool. See, I found out that wisdom has a lot less to do with what we feel and even how we think, and it has everything to do with what we do. And when the Bible talks about the fool and the wise, it almost always talks about what they actually do in life. So here's three questions to apply this and ask yourself. What dead flies are stinking up your life? What little follies are crowding out God's voice? What small choices are you making that can have long-term effects? You may say, it's not a big deal. It's no big thing. Yeah, okay, well, you know, it was kind of okay. It wasn't entirely true what I said. Yeah, but now you've put yourself in a situation where you've got to keep backing up that lie so you won't get found out. Yeah, well, it wasn't that, you know, it was like a couple of conversations over lunch. It wasn't that big of a deal. Yeah, but now you're starting to develop attraction to someone who you have no business being attracted to because it was just lunch, but it didn't stay that way. Yeah, well, it was one bite, it was one drink, it was one taste, it was one try, it was one thing. Yeah, but one leads to two, leads to four, leads to eight, leads to 16. And those small choices we make, those dead flies we allow in our life, those little decisions that are foolish but probably justifiable because I had a hard day and I deserve a break, they have a way of compounding over time. And if we're not careful, we may find that for all the wisdom and honor that we tried to pursue up here in the majority of our life, those little choices down here that we justified and downplayed and said weren't a big deal ended up taking away the very thing that we worked so hard for. So don't do that. Don't let the dead flies make you act the fool. Solomon would say, don't do it. Speaking of little choices, I decided I needed to make a big choice recently because of some other little choices I'd been making. Little choices that were not the wisest. I'm not going to tell you what they were quite yet. We'll get to that in a minute. But I've started recently a new eating plan. It's called the 16-8 eating plan. Anybody heard of the 16-8 eating plan? Nobody? Okay. Some of you have told about this in my life. So here's what it is, right? It's something called intermittent fasting. And all it means is that 16 hours a day I fast and 8 hours a day I eat. And so that means for me, typically I'll do all my eating between noon and 8 p.m. So that 8-hour window, I can eat what I want. But by 8, I stop, no more eating, and I skip breakfast, which is really hard for me because breakfast is my favorite meal of the day. But I realized that I wanted to see some changes in my life, and so I needed to do some things about that. And so this is a new thing that I have tried. And I'll be honest, I hate it very, very much. I don't like it. I don't like it one little bit. You might say, well, yeah, but you like where it's leading. Most days, I don't really care where it's leading. I just want to eat my breakfast. And every now and then, I maybe slip and eat a Krispy Kreme donut when I shouldn't. But that was just once. That was just once. No, I researched it. Apparently, on the 16:8 plan, you're allowed to have those things, right? But here's the thing, right? I don't like doing it, but I keep doing it because I believe that it matters. And you might ask, well, why are you doing it then? And what in the world does this have to do with Ecclesiastes? Oh, I'm glad you asked. Let's just read, and I'll show you. Ecclesiastes 10, verses 5 through 10. We could probably put a subject heading over this section called Duh. All right, let's read this together. Verse 5, there is an evil I have seen under the sun, an error proceeding from the presence of a ruler. The fool is appointed to great heights, but the rich remain in lowly positions. I have seen slaves on horses, but princes walking on the ground like slaves. The one who digs a pit may fall into it, and the one who breaks through a wall may be bitten by a snake. The one who quarries stones may be hurt by them. The one who splits logs may be endangered by them. Just pause there for just a minute. Okay, so we just read through those. How many would say it's a bad day when you're digging a pit and you fall into it? Right? But man, I mean, I've hit my hand with a hammer a few times, but I've never fallen all the way into a pit. By the way, I did used to dig pits when I was a kid. We would make forts and we would surround them with pits. They weren't very big pits because we were just kids. And I had the great idea that, you know what's even better than a pit? A pit with sharp sticks in the bottom. And so I did that. So we sharpened both ends of the sticks with our pocket knives and we shoved them in the ground, not even thinking about the absolute stupidity of that. In fact, I didn't really learn my lesson about how traps are not a great idea until we made one that took a long pole of rebar and stretched it back over on itself and put a tripwire there. And when my friend accidentally hit the tripwire and the rebar smashed him in the face and knocked a couple of teeth out, that's when we realized, duh, probably not a good idea. But I digress. Everything we just read, that's a bad day, right? The one who breaks through a wall. Imagine you're trying to do some demo on your house, demolition, kind of, you know, put some new things in. You're tearing down a wall, and you get bit by a snake. Who does that? That's a bad day. But then verse 10 comes along, and it says this. We have a highlight on the screen, in fact. If the axe is dull and one does not sharpen its edge, then one must exert more strength. However, the advantage of wisdom is that it brings success. And my first thought was, well, duh, if your axe is dull, then you have to sharpen it, otherwise you're just working way harder than you have to. Okay, move on. But then I started thinking, wait, is this really a lesson about tool maintenance, or is this a reminder for life maintenance? And then I started looking back at these other sections about digging pits and falling into it. And sometimes the fool is appointed to great heights, but the rich remain in lowly positions, and slaves on horses, but princes on the ground like slaves. Wait. That's not how it's supposed to work. And I realized something. And if you're taking notes, you can write this down. Watch this. Here's what Solomon would say to us, I think. You can't control every outcome, but you can commit to improving your input. Guess what? There's going to be times when you dig the pit and you do fall into it and there's nothing you can do about it. There's going to be times when you do your part and you work hard and you don't get rewarded the way you should. There's going to be times when tragedy happens and when uncertainty takes its toll and when things happen that you never would have chosen or expected. That happens. You can't control every outcome. But you can commit to improving your input. I started thinking about places in my life where Gee, I'd like to see better results. Okay. Well, what are you doing to change? You can't control all the outcome, but you can control your part in it. And I started wondering, two questions for you and for me to consider. I started wondering this, where have you given up hope for a good outcome? See, sometimes we can get stuck on the first part. Well, sometimes you just fall in the pit. Sometimes you just get bit by the snake. Sometimes things just aren't the way they're supposed to be. So why bother? Why try? Why work? Why even believe anymore? Why even hope anymore? Where have you given up hope for a good outcome? Maybe it's a financial situation that you just don't know how you're going to get out of this hole. Or a relationship situation. You don't know how you're going to mend this thing. Or it's a health situation. You don't know how you're going to get past this hurdle. Where have you given up hope for a good outcome? But then, on the other side of that, where do you need to improve your input? And how can you do that? Because guess what? There's things that you can probably do that will affect this situation. You can't control the outcome, but you can control what you're putting into it. And I put down a little list. In fact, if you have a program guide, you'll see that on the right-hand side where we normally have our connection card. I called it sample sharpeners. Because have you been in that moment when you're having a conversation with someone and you realize, man, not only is your heart not in it, your head isn't even in it either, and you're not even talking well. Or you're doing a task at work or at home, and you realize, man, you're just not even doing it right, and you don't know why. Maybe it's for exhaustion. Maybe it's for distraction. I don't know. But bottom line, you need to find a way to sharpen the axe. So maybe for you, it's taking time for reading and reflection. No surprise, that's me. I love taking time to read and reflect. I literally this week looked at my kind of reflected on my life and thought, man, I am not reading nearly as much as I would like to be. Gee, whose fault is that? Oh, yeah, mine. I need to make some priority changes. Maybe for you, it's reading and reflection that sharpens you. Maybe it's exercise and activity. You need to make the time to get out, go for a walk, go to the gym, do something. Maybe for you, it's new experiences. And you're stuck in a rut doing the same old thing, but you come alive when you go and try something new. So try something new. Or maybe for you, you get sharpened and recharged by comfortable routines. No, forget this new stuff. Give me what I'm used to. There's nothing wrong with that if that's how you're wired. Maybe for you, you get sharpened by meaningful conversation. Hey, nothing wrong with small talk, but sometimes you want something more substantive. Maybe you need to seek that out with people you can trust. Or maybe it's not about other people and conversation at all. It's artistic creativity. Maybe what sharpens and recharges you is finding a way to create or produce or make something beautiful or interesting. Or maybe it's not about producing anything. It's about doing random acts of kindness. And when you have the opportunity to just bless someone else, especially if they don't know it was you, that just charges you up and makes you feel good about the world. Maybe for you, it's enjoying nature's beauty. And you need to prioritize time to go and experience God's creation. Or maybe it's good meals with friends, sitting around a table of something good and just enjoying time. Or maybe it's something else. Whatever it is, find what you need to do to improve your input and do that. Because when you do, you'll find your axe is a lot sharper. And even though you can't control the outcome, you can improve your input. And speaking of eating good things, how about ice cream? Because I told you that the reason that I was starting the 16-8 plan was because I'd kind of been making some small choices that weren't the best. I found out that eating ice cream every night at 9:30 or 10 o'clock is not a wise choice for your health. Or for your wallet, by the way, because that stuff is expensive. Have you noticed how expensive ice cream is? So I decided, I said, hey, you know, we needed to change something. It has nothing to do with my wife. I was the one that was doing it. So I said, how would you feel about us not buying ice cream anymore? And she said, it's fine with me. So we did. So I cut ice cream out of my diet for the most part. Every now and then, maybe I'd be out somewhere. But no more 10 p.m. ice cream every night until we sold our condo and moved in with my parents. And they buy ice cream. And they buy good ice cream. And far be it from me to burn and scorn and insult their hospitality by not enjoying the double fudge brownie ice cream right out of the carton. Oh, shoot. Sorry, Mom. I didn't tell you I ate it out of the carton. Shh. So I found out I have to make a change because eating ice cream every night is not good for my health. Once again, this is one of those duh moments, right? So I was realizing that. James, hit the next slide, would you? Because here's the thing, right? Look at this verse, Ecclesiastes 10, 18. Because of laziness, the roof caves in. And because of negligent hands, the house leaks. And I started realizing, wait a minute, I'm the one that's to blame for this issue. I can't blame someone else for buying the ice cream. I'm the one that's not doing my part to not eat it. I can't blame someone else for, oh, well, you know, this happened. I didn't buy it. It wasn't my fault. Yeah, well, you know what? Because of laziness, the roof caves in. Well, you know, the roof caves, it happens. Yeah, but you could have fixed it if you'd get off your butt and do something about it, right? Continue in that passage, by the way. Ecclesiastes 10, 18, verse 19 says this, a feast is prepared for laughter, and wine makes life happy, and money is the answer for everything. Okay, so remember that Solomon's scope is living life under the sun, right? What he's saying here is simply this. Don't miss the obvious things in your life. It's obvious that laziness and negligence will cause problems, but sometimes we don't want to admit that. It's obvious that, hey, food and wine are things that are enjoyable. It should be enjoyed with wisdom, by the way, and knowing your own limits and making wise choices. That's a message for another day. And money. Okay, well, guess what? Under the sun, money pretty much is the answer to everything. It's not going to buy you salvation. It's not going to buy you everlasting love. But most other things it will take care of. But sometimes we want to overemphasize. Listen, I don't want to step on toes, but I want you to hear the truth. Sometimes we want to overemphasize that, well, God's going to take care of me. Yes and amen, but I heard a story. Maybe you heard it too. I'm pretty sure it's just an illustration. Actually, it has to be just an illustration because it involves somebody talking in heaven. There was a man who was caught in a flood on the top of his house, and he prayed, Lord, would you save me? And a man comes up in a truck. The water's rising, comes up in a truck. And he says, oh, hey, I got through here. Hop in the truck. And the man says, no, I'm good. God's going to save me. And then the water rises more, and then a guy comes up in a boat and says, here, hop in the boat. And the guy on the house says, it's okay. No, thank you. God will save me. And then the water rises even faster, and the man is now up to his waist. And then a helicopter comes and lowers the rope and says, hey, grab the rope. We'll lift you to safety. And the man says, no, it's okay. God will rescue me. And the man drowns and dies. And there he is in heaven and says, Lord, why didn't you save me? And the Lord says, I sent you a truck and I sent you a boat and I sent you a helicopter. What more do you want? Here's the big idea, right? Don't miss the obvious things. Solomon had gone through so many different ways of looking for satisfaction and looking for significance and looking for meaning in his life. But sometimes we want to over-spiritualize things, but don't miss the obvious. And we could say it this way too, right? Because really, what Solomon's talking about here is the contrast between negligence and preparation. And the contrast between laziness and hard work. But if he's talking about preparation, I think we could pull this in from week 4. Don't be so fixed on one path that you're not willing to change your plan. See, Solomon's talking about really simple stuff. You want to make some headway in your life? Work hard. You want to see some success in your life? Do things that earn money. And don't spend all of it on stuff that you don't need. You want to see God bless your life? Well, apply the wisdom that he's already given you. And don't expect him to give you a shortcut when he gave you the path right in front of you. I heard a great phrase once. Here's the great phrase, because someone was telling me about this thing in their life, and they wish God would change it, and there were some really specific things they were doing that were causing the problem, and there were specific things that God says, don't do that. And here's the phrase. I heard it in a sermon one time, and I was able to share it with this person. I said, don't expect God to bless your disobedience. That's obvious. But Solomon's encouraging us to not be so fixed on one path. Well, God's going to deliver me this way, or I'm going to have success in this thing, that you're not willing to change the plan. And so that said, take a look at chapter 11, verses 1 through 6. Because what Solomon's going to talk about is planning and preparing, but not putting all your eggs in one basket. Look at what he says here. He says, send your bread on the surface of the water, for after many days you may find it. Give a portion to seven or even to eight, for you don't know what disaster may happen on the earth. If the clouds are full, they will pour out rain on the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or the north, the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. One who watches the wind will not sow, and one who looks at the clouds will not reap. Are you just waiting, watching the wind, waiting for the perfect time to take that step of faith or that step of obedience or that new thing? Well, I just wait until it's the right time. Yeah, but you can wait so long that nothing ever happens. The one who watches the wind, is it the right time yet? Well, never sow. We'll never cast their seed out there. Sometimes you just got to get out there and do it and see what happens instead of waiting for perfection. Full disclosure, that's totally me. I'm that guy that's going to wait and think and plan and research and just wait. I just want to make sure I have the right strategy and the right, and then I'll do it. I'm that guy that waits and never does it because I'm waiting for the perfect time. And God's reminding me, he said, son, listen, you can wait for perfection and get nothing, or you can wait for pretty good and get something. Sometimes you just got to take a step and trust God to lead you along the way. The one who looks at the clouds will not reap. Solomon goes on, just as you don't know the path of the wind or how bones develop in the womb of a pregnant woman, so also you don't know the work of God who makes everything. And then he says this in verse 6. He says, in the morning sow your seed, and at evening do not let your hand rest, because you don't know which will succeed, whether one or the other, or if both of them will be equally good. Here's the big idea, right? If Solomon were sitting here with us and we were to ask him, hey, Solomon, in all the years you've lived and all the wisdom you've sought, what brought the best results? What's the strategy? What's the silver bullet? What's the, like, the one tip that's going to make everything work well? I think he'd probably say something like this. Personal progress comes from appropriate, what's that word? Action. Do you want to see progress in your life? Do something. Prayer, listen, prayer is powerful. It's extra powerful when it's combined with obedience, when we actually do what God reveals to us when we pray or when we study or when we seek what he wants us to do. We could apply it this way. Three questions for you and for me to consider. Number one, where are you hoping for something but not doing anything? Oh, man, I just really hope that this, I just really hope that that, I just really hope this situation will turn around. I just really hope that God will make this happen. Well, yeah, but are you doing something about it? Where are you, maybe for you it's the opposite. It's not like you're hoping something will change. You hope nothing changes because you're really comfortable right now. Where are you so comfortable that you've gotten complacent? No, things are fine. I'm fine. You're fine. We're fine. It's fine. Let's just not, you know, not rock the boat. Yeah, but where does trusting God for your life? Because we all want to trust God, right? I mean, that's a very Christian thing to do. We're supposed to trust God, right? But where does trusting God for your life look like taking steps in your life? Because sometimes the greatest expression of our trust in God is our willingness to act, even and especially when we don't have all the answers yet. It's like a great phrase I heard from, I listen to a lot of sermons. A great phrase I heard from a preacher one time that God has an easier time moving a car when it's in motion or directing them. I totally butchered that. Somebody's probably heard that quote before. God has an easier time directing a moving car than one that's sitting in the driveway. Now, we'll see if I can't butcher any more quotes tonight. Finish up with this. Ecclesiastes 11:7. all the way through verse 8 of chapter 12. Take a look at these passages with me. Solomon is finishing up his writing, and he wants us to know light is sweet, and it's pleasing for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if someone lives many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, since they will be many. All that comes is futile. So rejoice, young person, while you are young, and let your heart be glad in the days of your youth, and walk in the ways of your heart and in the desire of your eyes. But know that for all of these things, God will bring you to judgment. Remove sorrow from your heart and put away pain from your flesh, because youth and the prime of life are fleeting. And perhaps some of us would say amen to that in our hearts. You know how fleeting life really is. So Solomon says, so remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of adversity come, and the years approach when you will say, I have no delight in them, before the sun and the light are darkened, and the moon and the stars and the clouds return, after the rain, on the day when the guardians of the house tremble, and the strong men stoop, and the women who grind grain cease because they are few, and the ones who watch through the windows see dimly. By the way, he's describing our bodies as they age. When things grow dark, when the guardians of the house, these are our hands, when they tremble. The strong men, that's our back when it stoops. When the women who grind grain, that's our teeth because they are few. And the ones who watch through the windows, that's our eyes, see dimly. When the doors of the street are shut while the sound of the mill fades, and when one rises at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of song grow faint, our hearing fades away. Also, they are afraid of heights and dangers on the road. The almond tree blossoms, its white and gray hair. The grasshopper loses its spring, and the caper berry has no effect. For the mere mortal is headed to his eternal home, and mourners will walk around in the street before the silver cord is snapped and the golden bowl is broken. And the jar is shattered at the spring, and the wheel is broken into the well, and the dust returns to the earth as it once was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Everything is futile. Solomon describes the twilight of life as time grinds on and we have no way to stop it. And as our bodies break down, then there's no way to keep them young forever. And I think if he were here, he would say simply the same thing he said earlier to you and to me, to take stock of our life and cultivate the ability to enjoy life while you can. Enjoy it. Find those moments. Carve out those moments. Take those moments to heart. Enjoy life while you can. Live life as well as you can. Don't punt. Don't give up. Don't lose heart. And leave behind as much wisdom as you can. And verse 9 says, in addition to the teacher being a wise man, he constantly taught the people knowledge. He weighed and explored and arranged many proverbs. The teacher sought to find delightful sayings and write words of truth accurately. And the sayings of the wise are like cattle prods, and those from masters of collections are like firmly embedded nails. The sayings are given by one shepherd. But beyond these, my son, be warned. There is no end to the making of many books, and much study wearies the body. But when all has been heard, the conclusion of the matter is this: fear God and keep his commands, because this is for all humanity. For God will bring every act to judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil. And so Ecclesiastes finishes with Solomon's encouragement to fear God and keep his commands. Do what's right. Honor the Lord. Why? Because when you cultivate those habits, when you cultivate that orientation that fears and honors God and that obeys His command as best you can, when you cultivate those habits, you'll be able to do the very thing that we found ran like a thread through the whole book. The big idea that we explored in our very first week is how he wraps it up with a simple idea. Wherever you are, whatever's happening in your life, embrace this moment. Enjoy this moment. For this is a gift of God under the sun.
Hi friends, Pastor Philip here, and thanks for joining us today. If you've been blessed, we'd love to know. Please leave a review on iTunes or Facebook, or email us at connect@outpostchurch.org. Also, if you'd like to contribute to this ministry, you can send a text message with any amount to 84321 or just visit outpostchurch.org/give. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.